Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. You know, we have the popular image of the modern poet as sort of this young, starving artist in a garret, living on ramen noodles, maybe some peanut butter, pasta, pining away for a lost love. But our guests today are here to disabuse us of those notions. Richard Stokes and Mary Lou Spartz are with the Byrne Thompson Poetry Writing Group, and I am just so thrilled to have them here to share their poetry. I'm going to start with you, Mary, because you just turned 90. When was that?
I know, it's a surprise.
A surprise after 90 years. How about you, Richard? Can I ask that sensitive question? How old are you?
I'll be 82 in July.
Oh, my goodness. And both of you, you know, are still following your passions. And I have to ask you, Mary, at what age did your love affair begin with poetry?
Oh, it goes back to high school, I guess. Yeah, must be high school.
And how did that happen?
I was writing. I didn't quite know what it was, but I was writing. And I chose to share some of my work with my contemporaries. And they immediately poo-pooed my effort. So I learned early on that rejection was going to be a part of what was going on. And then I went off to other things, and I came back to poetry many years later.
I guess it does take a certain amount of courage to pull those things out of yourself and put them on paper, and then it's even more scary to share it with people. How about you, Richard? When did you start paying attention to poetry?
Well, first of all, I came to Juno 50 years ago this week, and accepted a job with the Department of Environmental Conservation. And although the department would not become official until July the 1st of that summer, and I feel safe in saying I had never written anything creative before that time. Unless it was forced upon me, you know, in high school, I'm sure I had to write something. But I had no interest in writing, really, until I came to Alaska and immediately started thinking I had things to write about. And poetry did not come quickly even then. I like to think that I just started, but actually, looking at the years, it's been about 40 years since I just started. And so I got a late start. I was an organic chemist by training, and I avoided the humanities and English courses and great literature. So I missed a lot that I probably will never catch up. But I'm glad that I'm catching up.
But it goes to show you that no matter how late of a start you get, that it's possible to still write poetry. And you have had some poetry that's very powerful, very compelling, both of you. So I guess let's start off kind of with poems that you like, and then we'll get into your poetry. So Mary Lou, you've brought something to share with us today. Tell us about the poem and why you selected it.
Well, I brought my friend and poet Sheila Nickerson, who lived in Juneau for a period of time, and provided us with wonderful poetry, and she was well received nationally. So we came to expect that every now and then Sheila would come up with another chapbook, and she did. And I brought this particular chapbook. It's called In the Compass of Unrest. And in there, I've got a poem marked that I like. Shall I read that?
Well, before you start, explain to some of us who may not know what a chapbook is.
Oh, a chapbook is a small collection. I don't remember how many words, lines, 50? Richard does this.
Usually 30 to 40 pages.
Yeah.
So a mini book.
It's a little mini book, and it's usually bound with a stapled spine. Not always, but very often. And it's usually printed locally and self-published and then distributed to whomever wants to take it in terms of bookstores and friends. And so that's a chapbook.
So you've got it there. It looks a little like a little yellowed, like you've had it for a while.
I'm sorry?
It looks a little yellowed, like you've had it for a while.
Yeah. Well, I'll go ahead and read then. Mermaid's Tears is the name of this poem. Even mermaids cry. Their tears, which some call glass, lie round and smooth on every beach. Picking one up, you think you hold coke or milk or magnesia. But what you hold is grief. Slipping one in your pocket, perhaps for a child, you carry it home, fingering it softly. Because it pleases you, you forget it. Then, one night, from hiding, comes the sound of crying. You will not know it, turning in the arms of one you love or swimming through your sleep. But something makes you stir and see the beaches of the world. You are standing at their edge, retelling what you know, till pieces fall in colored bits like glass around your feet.
That's lovely.
Isn't that lovely? Yeah.
And why did you choose it?
Well, Sheila, and of course, influenced me a great deal in terms of my particular style of writing poetry. She brought together the imaginative world of mermaids and other fanciful characters, and with the world of words, and also the world of action. In this particular poem, she talks about walking on the beach and picking up glass pieces. We've all done that, I believe, or most of us have, that have been left there by the tide and the beach to get very smooth. And we pick them up because they attract us. We know they're not shells, but they may be a piece of Coke bottle, as she says, or a piece of blue, which is magnesium, milk of magnesia. And I found the way she brought things together and put them in such a an understandable order made me feel very comfortable.
So what happened to your friend? Is she still alive?
Oh, Sheila, yes, as far as I know. I certainly hope so. She and her husband, Martin, moved to Bellingham some years ago. And they also have a home in California. And usually at Christmas, I get a Christmas note that explains their activities for the year. And I'm always grateful to find out what Sheila and family are doing.
I know those Christmas greetings suddenly take on a new importance, don't they, over the years. Well, Richard, what have you got for us?
I have one by, at least one to start, by Ted Kooser, who was a poet laureate. And before I talk more about him, Mary Lou and I did not compare notes as to what we were going to read today, and I almost picked Sheila Nickerson myself, so that's quite a compliment to her. This poem, and I think the others that I will read, I like images and I like stories. So if there's a narrative, and also vivid images, and some sort of ending that means something. Those are usually the type of poems that catch my attention. And when you ask us to do this, I I dived into some of my books trying to think of, you know, picking favorite poems, and it was just too much of a job. So I decided that I would just pick some poems that appeal to me at the moment, and here goes. This is by Ted Kuzler, Abandoned Farmhouse. He was a big man, says the size of his shoes, on a pile of broken dishes by the house. A tall man, too, says the length of his bed in an upstairs room. And a good, God-fearing man, says the Bible with a broken back. On the floor below the window, dusty with sun, but not a man for farming, says the fields, cluttered with boulders and a leaky barn. A woman lived with him, says the bedroom wall, papered with lilacs, and the kitchen shelves covered with oilcloth. And they had a child, says the sandbox, made from a tractor tire. Money was scarce, said the jars of plum preserves and canned tomatoes sealed in the cellar hole. And the winter's cold, says the rags in the window frames. It was lonely here, says the narrow country road. Something went wrong, says the empty house in a weed-choked yard. Stones in the field say he was not a farmer. The still sealed jars in the cellar say she left in a nervous haste. And the child, its toys are strewn in the yard like branches after a storm. A rubber cow, a rusty tractor with a broken plow, a doll in overalls. Something went wrong, they say.
That's lovely.
You know, what appeals about that poem, I think, is there's a mystery. Like, after the end of it, it's like, what went wrong?
What went wrong, right? Yeah.
What do you think went wrong? Any theories?
Well, you know, he was not a good farmer, and I feel like something happened to the child. The fact that the toys were left in the yard, I feel like something happened to the child. And I have read some background, and I don't think that Ted Kuzler knew what went wrong here either. So
see, I'm a journalist. I need to know what went wrong. But I guess that's the beauty of poetry is the poet doesn't have to answer all of the questions.
I hope not.
So let's take a little bit of a break, a pause, and when we come back, we will share some of your own poetry, some of what you've written, all right?
Okay.
Yes.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon, and we are so lucky here to have Mary Lou Spartz and Richard Stokes here for us, coming to share poetry and share what they love about it, so that we too can learn to appreciate it more. And so what I've asked them to do is to share some of the poems that they've written, and I thought we'd start with you, Mary Lou. I know that the two of you recently had a poetry reading for the Byrne Thompson's group at the museum, So and I heard many good things about it, so I'm looking forward to hearing your poems.
Well, thank you, Rhonda. Yes, that was a wonderful wonderful moment, a wonderful afternoon for us. And we have to thank the Juno City Museum for the technical effort that they went to and the arrangements. And Alyssa Borges was the person who managed all the technical things about it. We did it on Zoom, as you probably know. And I was very impressed. She did a wonderful job. Thank you so much, Juno Museum.
Well, it's very different, isn't it, these days to be doing poetry readings next to a microphone or a computer screen. Usually you have people gathered around you. So everybody out there, you are, imagine that you are outdoors on a deck and Mary Lou and Richard are sitting there comfortably reading to you.
This is a poem that I was honored to have published in the recent Tidal Echoes, and it's called Planning Ahead. First, she'd go to the thrift store, pick out a nice J. Crew jacket. Then she'd roll up her long skirt with her black flats, pack them in a backpack while imagining how it will be. Next, she'd zip the canvas cover around her mandolin, go down to the harbor and take off in a puddle jumper headed for town and the folk fest. This year, she visualized, maybe the tall, graceful guy with the long hair and long arms would ask her to dance. He'd swing her out wide, her beautiful blue skirt swirling around her. He'd smile. She'd smile, and after the dance, he'd say, let's go for a beer at the Alaskan. Maybe later, he'd walk her back to the Driftwood Motel, hold her hand as they walked. Maybe, if the rain is not too hard and the wind light, he'll kiss her at the door. And maybe he'd ask her to play her mandolin while he plays the dulcimer on the street corner, just the two of them. And maybe, well, maybe they'd take up life together with music, dancing, and love.
I don't know whether to laugh or cry. Now, Richard, you have got to like that poem because you said you like a story.
Right.
And we're left wondering, six kids later, what happened to that couple? No.
Right.
So, Mary Lou, before Richard shares his poem, can you tell us about the genesis of that piece of writing? What triggered it?
Well, there were several things. As you know, or maybe you don't, Rhonda, since you haven't lived in Juneau since recently. Am I right there?
Right. I came here in about December. I have, as a journalist, I've covered the legislature, so I've covered several sessions and have spent time here during that period and visited here to do stories, but I don't really know the rhythms of this community.
Well, Folk Fest, which was this year just virtual, as we know, and is really the kickoff to spring. And when that comes, we know we're in good hands. We have people coming in from all of the outer communities, and from some from the north, some from Canada, some from the rest of the United States. And they come here to sing, to play, to visit, to get together and have workshops, and just to see old friends, and to dance and sing and enjoy. So it's our opening gun for spring, and that was probably where that all started. And I would go occasionally at that time to the folk fest itself, and it was so enjoyable to watch people dance and to watch everybody enjoying and talking and visiting, and it's just really quite an affair.
And your poem was maybe about the beginning of an affair. So Richard, what have you pulled together for us?
At least the first one I want to read has to do with Twin Lakes. I live on Twin Lakes, and of course during the winter the lake freezes and people congregate, and I've always thought the activity was a little bit like a Ree Munoz painting sometimes, just full of life. And most of my poems are inspired by sights and sounds, and so this has a fair amount of both of those. It's entitled Scores. In winter sunlight, weak but bright, scores of skaters enliven the frozen lake. Laughing children slide and glide, dogs bark, and from a pickup hockey match, clacks and clicks of sticks striking ice, rifle shot cracks from pucks well struck. Figure skaters score lines and loops on the lake's gray skin as bright blades sing from a score of exuberance.
Some amazing images there. So tell us the backstory on that poem.
Well, I think the only backstory is I just happened to be walking by one day when you know, the lake was just alive with people. And there was a hockey match going on, a pickup hockey game. I don't ice skate myself, so I was just walking by as a pedestrian on the bike path and was struck with probably what I heard first, and then just the sights of this joyful mayhem, you know, dogs, kids, adults, which I, you know, is just the best part of Juneau.
Joyful mayhem. I'm going to remember that. That's a good phrase. Because what do you call that when two things are contradictory in a term? An oxymoron?
Oxymoron,
okay.
I think, yeah.
So let's talk, before we go here, a little bit about where poetry is going. I mean, both of you have seen a lot of decades of poetry, a lot of different trends. I mean, you probably remember what beatnik poetry, and then sort of the free-form poetry that evolved, and now there's been rap, which is like a modern form of poetry. What do you distill from all of that through all your years?
Yeah, I don't really know how to... I don't exactly know how to answer that because my own is so pedestrian in terms of, you know, it's not classic by any means. I don't use a lot of rhyme. I don't pay that much attention to meter. So I don't know how to answer that question. And in particular with rap, I like the way some of it sounds. I don't like many of the lyrics, but I like some of the sounds. I like the rhythm.
Well, it is a form of poetry, and it probably reflects the time, a lot of the conflicted emotions that we have in our time period in history. Mary Lou, what are your thoughts about the state of language today and where it's going?
Well, I haven't thought of it that way. I do know that people are speaking considerably faster than I would like. And every now and then I have to stop someone on the phone and say, will you start again, please, and slow down? Because I think that in terms of how many words you can get into a conversation, it's jumped from something like 85 to 100 and some. So it reflects, I suppose, the kind of incredible period we're in, where things are changing so quickly that we're just breathless trying to keep up.
So you're 90, and Richard, you're 82 now.
82.
So I guess, is poetry something that has served you well across the ages, across the decades?
Well, I think so, and you know, not only poetry, but the groups that I have been in, like the Byrne Thompson, the other members are, you know, very supportive. Their work is inspiring. So we've all developed friendships that go beyond the writing. And really before, and there's some overlap here, I'm from Georgia originally, which is where my accent comes from. And I had a writing group there that traced back to junior college. And there were at one time seven or eight of us that wrote, met once or twice a year. And so the friendships and the poetry, the written word and the relationships have both been very, very important.
Well, Mary Lou, we'll leave you with the last word on final thoughts on poetry before we go on.
Well, the poetry, I suppose it's intriguing. There is so much to know in terms of form, and there's so much that is in our literary history that is so impressive that there's just never enough time, no matter what age you are, to absorb all of it. You know, you can start with the great bard and the amazing, amazing work that goes on there. Never gets boring, never gets old, no matter how many times you hear tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. And that's the kind of thing that I think it is left to poetry a lot of times, to make it as precise and as near to the heart as possible without finding it unrealistic. I think realism is a really important part. In terms of what's going on at the poetry now, well, I must admit that I do not find a lot of comfort in some of the newer poets. I don't quite grasp what they're trying to tell me. And I have become very, very much a snob of wanting to know what you want to tell me.
Hey, but that's the mystery of it. Well, we've got to leave it there. But I want to thank both of you, Mary Lou Spartz and Richard, for joining us. Richard Stokes, it's been a very nice visit. Thank you so much for helping us come to appreciate poetry.
Well, thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
Really nice to be with you.
Great to have you.